Glasgow in the break after this session. Next up, thank you, Francis, and thank you for keeping us to time. Next up, we have Matthew Belmonte. And Matthew is going to talk to us about the frontal N250 is generated near the temporal parietal junction and reflects recognition of emotions from both faces and non-social objects.
Okay. Do I get the prize for the long title?
Longest title.
Okay.
A chocolate for you in the desk.
Well, thank you all for joining us and for hosting this. I am going to present work, data that was actually collected at Cornell University. And this is principally the work of my undergraduate student at the time, Jiggy Attaningam. Also, my technicians, James Jones Rounds and Dave Post, my postdoc, Barbara Ganzel. So we were interested in the question, or Jiggy really was interested in the question, of what makes a face evoke potential, and can that evoke potential be elicited by non-social stimuli? What is it about face-related ERPs that actually makes them face-related? Is it the stimuli, or is it simply the stimuli that we have used to evoke them? So the question of, can a quote-unquote face ERP be elicited by affective evaluation of a non-face object? For example, a wilting flower, something like this. Second question, how do the scalp maxima of evoke potential correspond to cortical generators? If we see a frontal maximal potential on the scalp, does that really mean that frontal cortex is involved in the underlying brain process? Or is it being projected from elsewhere in the brain? So Jiggy designed an experiment to answer these questions. She has several contrasts between face and object stimuli and between tasks that involve detection of emotion or detection of simpler contrasts. So face in the control identification task, subjects were identifying only male or female. In the emotion recognition tasks, they were identifying angry, happy, sad, or neutral, four choices. Similarly for objects, subjects were distinguishing between human-made and non-human-made objects in the control condition. And in the emotion recognition task, they were assigning emotional valence, happy, sad, neutral, angry, to various objects. So here are examples of the emotional stimuli, face stimuli, obviously, and the object stimuli, we have things like a wilting flower or a happy sunflower. I should note that in selecting the emotional objects, Jiggy did a preliminary study where she just got people in and asked them to rate affectively the valence of all these objects. So we're pretty sure that, at least for an undergraduate population at an American university, these objects do correspond to the emotional categories that we place them in. So high density, 128 channel recording with Biosemi system, fairly typical recording characteristics. And the contrast that we're interested in, what can we learn from this work? I'm sorry about the size here. PowerPoint has done something to me. We can contrast neutral faces versus emotional faces to identify the effect of seeing emotion in a social stimulus. We can contrast emotional faces during the emotion detection task versus the same faces during the gender identification task to identify the effect of task. And we can contrast emotional faces during the emotion task to neutral faces during the emotion task to identify the effect of actually recognizing a presented emotion. The conventional way to analyze ERP data is to look at it in what we call sensor space. and not in what we call source space. So source space is what are the electrical dipole generators inside cerebral cortex that are actually generating these potentials. Sensor space is how do the evoked potentials look by the time they get from the brain onto the scalp, and of course overlap with each other and interfere with each other and so forth. So we get a basic indication of what's going on inside the brain if we look at the data in sensor space, but we get a much, much more interesting one, much more, more detailed one, if we try to convert sensor data to source data. So you can see in sensor space, we throw away most of this high density data, and we just look at a few electrodes at selected sites, frontal, occipital, parietal. To get the same data into source space, we take the data from all the electrodes. We use independent component analysis, which is a mathematical information theoretic process. And we identify individually varying electrical sources inside the head. We then cluster those sources into clusters that look reasonable across different subjects. And here are some plots of the scalp activity related to each of those clusters. So, ERBs of interest. We're interested in the face-related N170. We're also interested in what has been termed the emotion-related N250, which appears in frontal cortex. It turns out from our source analysis that both of these negative potentials on opposite sides of the head come from the same generator, or at least from the same general area inside the cortex. They all cluster around the temporoparietal junction. And N170 seems to be the back end of this generator. It corresponds in time to what we call the vertex positive potential, which appears in at frontal sites. And in addition, the same generator seems to generate a frontal N250 80 milliseconds later. It doesn't turn up with a corresponding back end on this half of the head because there are other things that are going on that mask it. But N250, contrary to its frontal scalp localization, seems in fact to be coming from temporoparietal junction, from an area very, very close to N170. We were also interested in P300 and the late positive potential, principally coming from a parietal generator, which I will talk to you about and which is shown here. So in faces, you'll be happy to know we replicated the very, very standard result on the N170. It seems to represent facial structure encoding, and in our task, there were no differences evoked by facial stimulus or by facial task. It's a very perceptually driven component. Let me orientate you to the layout of these slides. We've got sensor space ERPs over here on the left. We've got source space ERPs over here on the right. So I'd like you to pay particular attention to the source space. There is a significant difference in sensor space here, but it's not actually coming from the N170 source generator. It's coming from something else, which just demonstrates to us the importance of analyzing these things in source space. So, frontal, and I put that in quotes because it's frontal scalp maximal, but it's not at all coming from frontal cortex. Quote unquote, frontal N250 seems to be modulated by the difficulty of emotion detection. So again, looking over here in the bottom right panel, if we compare in the emotion recognition task, neutral versus emotional stimuli, we find out that for the neutral stimulus, N250 is accentuated, because here you are, you're sitting there, you're trying to find out, is there an emotion here? The stimulus is neutral, and you have to exert that extra effort to try to pull out an emotion from a stimulus that turns out not to contain that emotion. This is actually a replication of other work that has also identified greater N250 in response to neutral versus emotional faces. That work termed N250 an emotion-related negativity. As we shall see, it's not really emotion-related so much as task complexity-related. So later on, moving to P300, we find out in sensor space, if we take a parietal set of electrodes, we're measuring P3B, the later component of the P300 response, overlaid with something that Scott McKeag at San Diego has termed P3F. It's a simultaneous overlapping generator, but it's coming not from parietal cortex, but from frontal cortex. And it turns out that the difference between P3B and P3F in sensor space is driven not so much by P3B, but actually by the overlapping P3F coming from frontal cortex. So that P3F is modulated by task set for emotion recognition across conditions of stimulus emotion. So it's greater when we are actually trying to recognize emotions. Moving on to the late positive potential, again from these parietal sensor sites on the left and from sources on the right, we show good agreement between sensor and source space. The late positive potential is modulated by task set for emotion recognition, again, across all conditions of stimulus emotion. All right, so the data that I've just showed you are for faces. Now we ask the question, how does this differ for objects? Well, the occipital N170 seems face-specific, and I put in parentheses mostly here, because we do actually see this slight little dip superimposed on a rising potential. So there might be some object-related activity to it, but it's mostly face-specific across all conditions. The N250, the putative facial emotion-related putative frontal component, actually is neither. It's not specific to faces, and it's not frontal. As we've seen, it's temporoparietal. So if we compare the various object and face conditions, we find out that N250 is largest when you're trying to recognize emotions from emotional objects. Emotional faces, they're pretty easy, we're exposed to them all the time. Emotional objects, they're kind of harder. Even though we can classify them, it takes more effort to do so. So if we look at these contrasts, again, sensor space on the left, source space on the right. Here is emotional faces versus objects. And we can see for objects, N250 is much, much greater. And again here, for neutral versus emotional faces, N250 is greater for neutral versus emotional objects, N250 is much, much greater for emotional objects. Moving on to P300, it is modulated by stimulus emotion and by task set. The P3F is greater for the emotion recognition task and for emotional objects, whereas the P3B is greater for gender identification, the control task. So most of what we're seeing in conventional, you know, sensor space parietal P3B recordings is actually coming from P3F in terms of this difference. It actually inverts when we move from sensor space to source space. If we then look at late positive component, we find that the late positive component is not as long sustained in response to object stimuli as it is for face stimuli. Okay, so to summarize all of these data, we've looked at ERPs moving from early sensory and attentional processing to task-related stimulus evaluation to higher order cognition. And in the domain of early sensory and attentional processing, we see that the occipital N170 is, and I again put in parentheses, almost completely driven by facial stimuli. It is generated near the temporoparietal junction, and it is actually the same dipole generator as the vertex positive potential. Its back end, if you will, appears at 170 milliseconds over frontal cortex as a corresponding positive potential. In the domain of task-related stimulus evaluation, in the same or a very, very close by temporoparietal area, the quote-unquote frontal N250 reflects discrimination difficulty. It's greater for attempts to recognize emotion from a neutral face. It's greater for object tasks in general compared to face tasks. and it's greater for recognition of emotion within object tasks. And in the cognitive domain, from frontal and parietal cortices, reflecting recognition and response selection in response to a stimulus, we have the quote-unquote parietal P3B, which actually seems to comprise both parietal and frontal generators. That frontal P3 generator is driven by stimulus, emotion, and task set, and the parietal late positive component, which is rising at the same time the frontal P3 is falling, is modulated by stimulus type, by stimulus emotion, and by task set. So in other words, by just about everything. Moving through from the early to the late processing, we can see that in the beginning, potentials are driven largely by sensory information, intermediately by task complexity and difficulty of discrimination, and finally by attentional set and response selection. So all of this work is principally the idea of Jiggy Attalingam, who's now moved on to a PhD program at UCSF. Also a lot of work from my technicians, James Jones Rounds and David Post. Dave has now moved on to the medical program at the University of Illinois Chicago, and my postdoc, Barbara Ganzel. Funds both from Cornell University and from a US National Science Foundation faculty early career development. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Okay, some questions for a few minutes for questions for Matthew.
There are different processing kind of stages that happen along the way before the emotion is actually recognized. But I understand from your research that there is the emotional recognition stage of it is quite similar for both facial stimuli and objects.
Well, I'm not sure that we are necessarily able to capture and to differentiate processes specifically related to emotion recognition. I mean, certainly in that frontal or scalp maximal frontal N250, we have a process that seems to index the difficulty of discrimination. Now, whether that is specific to emotions coming from faces and objects or whether it's just everything, that is difficult to say. Is it reflected to the perception of emotion, or is it simply reflected or related to the perception of detail within any stimulus? I think if we, one thing this study shows is that we tend to find what we're looking for. You know, if we ask social cognitive questions, we will find evoked potentials that appear to be related to social cognitive processes. But are they really just more general indices of perceptual complexity?
Thank
you.
We'll take Peter first and then Michael.
Sorry, this is maybe slightly tangential in a way, but I'm kind of curious about the methodology. What's the downside of source space analysis? Because apart from the computation required, why doesn't everybody do it? Is there some drawback to doing it that way?
That's a really good question. I think the primary answer, actually, is two primary answers. Number one, comparability. Right? I mean, everybody has published about, say, scalp N170 and these components for years and years. And if you want to compare your data to the data that are already out there, then it makes sense to do the same measurement that other people have done. The other thing is, I think, kind of generational change and know-how, if you will. I think people who've been trained to do sensor space analyses, that's what they do. And it has taken, actually, quite a while for this kind of source space analysis to gain traction. It started off in San Diego in the 1990s, and it really is just still emerging onto the scene. I think if you have the wherewithal to do high-density data collection, I mean, so many people collect 128 channels and they throw out like 110 of them. It doesn't make much sense. Why not just go back to a 16-channel ERP system and place your electrodes accordingly? So I think really that generational change plus comparability are the main factors. I don't see any reason not to do source-based analysis.
Well, I'm just showing my ignorance about ERPs now. You put the slide on about the N250.
Okay.
The last
Let's
one.
See.
Yeah, faces and objects.
Yeah. Okay.
Bottom right hand picture there. You're saying that there's a difference there at the N250. How do you know that that's a difference there at the N250? It's not just a carryover from the reflex back after the N170.
Right, that's a very good question. So independent components analysis separates, using a mutual information criterion, separates all of these signals that you record all over the head into a small number of generators. And it does that by asking the question, how do these generators vary independently from each other? ICA has been able to tell us, in the case of these data, that the N250 and the N170 seem to be coming from either one and the same generator, or perhaps more likely, two generators that are so close together to each other near the temporoparietal junction that they cannot be resolved using the data and the resolution that we have. So you don't know with ERPs in general whether a difference is a true difference or a carryover. We can be somewhat more certain that it's a true difference if we're analyzing in source space, because we don't have the problem of superposition of two different simultaneous generators at one scalp site. We don't absolutely know, you're right. I mean, the only way to know for sure is, you know, to sync depth electrodes or something. Given the resolution limits we have, these appear to be coming from the same generator at two different times.
We'll stop there and keep to the schedule. Thank you very much, Matthew. And next up, we have Dean Feidel. Or perhaps